we don't want to encourage piracy.
What they should go after is the pirates, I guess. I am a pirate. I should be arrested, jailed, or fined.
It's Sunday, March 26th, 2006.
Almost live from the Fuking Ionosphere, it's the Pirates Week with Ragnar Danisjold.
Well, hey everybody, I am Ragnar Danisjold, and this is the Pirates Week, a podcast serving the pirate shortwave community. We take a look into the past week's pirate radio activity, what's going on over at the Free Radio Network, a tech tip or two, general free radio and DXing news, the propagation forecast, throw in a little pod-safe music, and I call it Pirates Week. Got a lot of good stuff to cover this week, but I did want to talk about a few things that I have been neglecting over the last month, really, ever since Winterfest. A couple things I keep shoving to the wayside. Thought I'd kind of get them out there in the open in the pre-ramble now. First off, the new intro, the little voice clips that are coming in, if you could try to figure out who that is, in fact, that's Leo Laporte from This Week in Tech. If you subscribe to his podcast, a great, great podcast, as he goes on to claim that he is a pirate and he should be jailed and fined. I think that's, I don't know, I kind of clipped that out from a couple months ago, actually, been trying to figure out how to use it. But whenever Leo Laporte wants to say he's a pirate and admit to it, yeah, I'll use that. What else did I want to say? NRI, Southern Sounds, out of Tasmania, has picked up the Pirates Week and has put it into their programming. I'd like to really thank them. I think everybody needs to go down and check out Southern Sounds out of Tasmania. They got a web stream, and he's actually got a news report, a DXing news report he's starting to put out as a podcast, and that's really neat. It's it covers a lot of the same stuff as This Week in Amateur Radio or the RSGB or a few of them, but it does have a Southern Hemisphere feel to it, and that's really neat, and I like that. And I'd like to really thank him for putting up the Pirates Week down on his program out of Tasmania. And just the fact that it's out of Tasmania, that's cool. And talk about organizations using the Pirates Week in their broadcast. The Wookiee Satellite Network is still using the Pirates Week, and that's, I really enjoy that. It's no longer being used inside the Club Impaler overnight, but it is being run right afterwards, about 3 a.m. on Wednesday mornings, which is an odd time, but I still really appreciate them using the Pirates Week on their fine satellite network. That's great. What else did I want to bring up? Oh, hey, daylight savings time is coming up. Actually, if you're in Europe, it's already starting, and if you're in America, it's starting next week. So we got a week here the week of confusion, I think Glenn Hauser put it, where half of the world has started, and we got another week until the United States starts, or at least North America. So we're calling it the week of confusion for daylight savings times. Starts the first Sunday in April here in the U.S. and in the European Union, it starts the last Sunday in March. So that's why we always use Universal Standard Time to keep away from the confusing changing of the clocks. And if you've been over to the website, you've noticed that the Shortwave Pirate Archive is, their logo is gone, but it has been replaced by the DX Programs logo. It's the same site. Al has let the Pirate DXer have control over the website and is now being run by the Pirate DXer. So DX Programs. That's the same site, and you can download a lot of good audio off of that. A lot of DXing shows off of the DX Programs website, including the Pirates Week. And talking about websites, WBCQ has redesigned their website, long overdue. Kudos to Cosmic Debris for a really nice look. I like how it looks. It's a lot cleaner. And lastly, I'd like to mention one last thing before we get into Pirates in the News. The Media Geek. That's right, the Media Geek radio show covering free radio, pirate radio, and a lot of alternative media. Found this about 2 months ago, really, now, the Media Geek. Really nice show. It's kind of fast-paced. I kind of think of it as the bastard love child of On the Media and Media Minutes. It's kind of fast-paced, covers a lot of alternative stuff. I like it. I'm subscribed, and I think you should go take a look at it. He's covered a lot of pirate stuff, as well as, I think last week he did zines and underground publications. And it's neat, and I'm definitely subscribed. Kudos to the Media Geek. And, of course, everything that I discuss here today, go over to the blog at shortwavepirate.info. You'll see links to the Pirate Week homepage, and you can go to the blog and see all the links of everything I'm going to talk about today. So let's get right into Pirates in the News. Well, the main story, and when I say main, I mean it is everywhere. It's even hit into the major media markets, just normal news stories all over the place. The Streets. Now, we covered this last week. The Streets is still in the news. The mainstream media has picked it up and is running with it now. And that's a FM pirate radio down in Florida that is now, or at least they are saying that he is, or the transmitter is, interfering with airport air traffic control broadcast. Now, the transmitter was put in adjacent, or at least the antenna was adjacent to the Miami airport. Now, this is a pirate hip-hop station based in Miami and has reported to be interfering with two frequencies used to communicate with air traffic controllers. So far, the FCC, the FAA, Florida Department of Law Enforcement authorities have been unable to locate the transmitter or any of the individuals associated with broadcasting the illegal signal. Like I started to say, this story is all over the place. You can just type it into any Google search and you'll come up with multiple stories. I was first alerted to it off of Cracker's website, his news website. This Week in Amateur Radio also had a take on this pirate radio station. Let's take a listen to This Week in Amateurs Radio's take on it.
Pilots coming and going from Miami International Airport are getting an earful of something unexpected, hip-hop tunes from a pirate radio station. The music comes on a pair of frequencies from a station that calls itself The Streets. Authorities trace the signal to a large radio antenna on a tower mounted on a nearby warehouse in a Miami suburb, but did not find a radio transmitter or disc jockey. And The Streets remains on the air, interfering at times with communications between pilots and control tower. It's intermittent, not all day, every day, said Kathleen Bergen, a Federal Aviation Administration spokeswoman. But clear communication between air control and the pilots is a critical part of flying. The Federal Communications Commission and the Florida Department of Law Enforcement are helping in the investigation. The FAA said it has conducted about 30 similar investigations into pirate stations interfering with airport transmissions in the past decade. A Florida anti-piracy law went into effect a year ago that makes it a third-degree felony for anyone caught sending transmissions that interfere with signals from licensed public or commercial stations or broadcasting without a license. At the warehouse, State Agent Joseph Zeller confiscated 3 computers, a monitor, a mixing board, a stereo compressor, a microphone, a 2-deck CD player, a telephone, a DSL modem, 2 stereo speakers, and 10 cases filled with CDs. Authorities said that the owner of the warehouse had no idea the building was being used by an illegal radio station.
Our second news story of the week is a follow-up interview from DJ Dave Rabbit. That's right, radio first-termer DJ Dave Rabbit. This is off of the radioabout.com website. DJ Dave Rabbit of Radio First-Termer fame, the station that literally broadcasted out of a whorehouse during Vietnam War, has provided a second follow-up interview on About.com. He claims he had no idea that people even remembered his broadcasts until last February. This new interview tidies up a few loose ends and goes through Dave's reasons for doing the broadcast back in Vietnam and his inspirations. He makes a few mentions that some Hollywood types have contacted him, as well as announcing he finished the final version of his music bio video DVD, Dave Rabbit's Vietnam, The Road to Radio First Termer, which is reported to be included in the DVD release of the movie Sir No Sir. And he is also working on a 35-year anniversary show of Radio First Termer. Hey, someone really needs to get their hands on this one as soon as possible. I'd like to hear that one on the Pirate Waves, the 35-year anniversary show of Radio First Termer. Anyways, take a look at the About.com, the RadioAbout.com website, and take a look at a lot of his answers. That's his follow-up interview from last month. It's really a neat read. And finally, the FCC upholds a $14,000 fine against Gibson Tech for manufacturing and marketing illegal FM transmitters. This also from This Week in Amateur Radio.
The FCC has upheld a fine of $14,000 against Gibson Tech Ed Incorporated of Orem, Utah, for marketing two models of unauthorized FM broadcast transmitters. The Enforcement Bureau proposed a fine last September, the FCC said in its latest decision, that Gibson did not reply. So now the agency has issued the forfeiture order. Gibson has 30 days to pay.
Now here's something we hope you'll really like.
Well, with that, it's time to once again take a look over at the Free Radio Network to see what's being posted of note. That's, of course, found at www.frn.net/vines. Starting off with the FRN Grapevine shortwave area, Voodoo Radio posts a link to the Crest Radio Museum. This is a radio collection that is way out of control. Radio Freakio's education, or is it indoctrination, into the shortwave pirate hobby continues with the post, Newbie Question, Was Somebody Jamming? Partner supplies a few links for him to check out, and Sanjay steers him to some good reading material from Andy Yoder, Skip Airy, and Jerry Bergs. JB notes that WEWN noticed that the Crystal Ship and WHYP had success using the frequency 6875, so they decided to move on in. Commander Bunny posts the thread, We Need Your Help, stating Cracker, the commander, and a couple other pirate operators have been under attack by this guy, Mike Gawkin. Aside from sending him false emails, threats, and obscenities, he has waged a campaign of lies and false accusation against them. This is a good read to explain what's the fusses about Mike Gawkin. Rockin' Rick notes that WBCQ has updated their website. I think we mentioned that a little bit earlier in the podcast. But Cracker supplies that the info that Cosmic Debris is not quite done with the update, but should be finished very soon. Sea Lord starts a really good thread called Ground System Noise about running coax underground using an antenna feeder isolator and ground rods. He thinks the ground rods may be acting like antennas and picking up added noise. Radio Freakio wonders what the buzzsaw noise is on 6925. JB noticed it too, saying, first you hear a loud buzz-type burst, and then another one much quieter, as if it is further away. Captain Bohemian thinks it is a over-the-horizon radar. HV Transformer disagrees, thinks it sounds more like an encrypted frequency-hopping microburst comms. Pigmeat says it's been popping up for a good year or more, but it's been more frequent in the last month or so. Cracker says it's solar flares. Well, whatever it is, it doesn't sound like it is intentional jamming, but another noise source for the pirates and their listeners to deal with. Taking a look over at Low Power FM section, Old Radio Guy posts a link to the Miami Pirate story. Rockin' Rick doesn't think a harmonic is really possible to interfere with the aviation frequencies. Iowa pirate wonders if the pirate was high in the band and throwing off spurs instead of harmonics. This is a really good thread for the discussion on FM signals. Take a look at it. It gets a little technical, but it is a good read. Continuing on, Pigmeat on Sanji and ATS 818/realisticDX390 died. Now there's a thread name for you. States that he picked up the used 818, says it's overloading big time when he hooks it up to a 40 meter dipole through the antenna jack. I'm wondering if anybody has a fix. Rockin' Rick is looking for ideas for a home brew design for a shortwave and FM work. QSLs this week were received by Border Hunter Radio, Undercover Radio, Grasscutter Sunshine, and MAC. And that's all the posts of note on the FRN this week. As always, I have no affiliation with the FRN, just as a regular reader. Okay, it doesn't look like we're going to have a Pirate DXer today, so let's take a look at some of the logs I recorded this last week. Do two quick ones. The first one, WBZO, or at least that's how it was identified on the FRN. That's how I initially identified it. This is 6925 upper sideband with a great signal. This was the 23rd at about 2350 or so, right around the midnight hour, UTC. At the end of the program, though, we did get a cracker radio ID in Morse, but this is WBZO, Bozo Radio.
It's 10 p.m. You know where your wiener is?
You trying to touch my wiener.
I am a wiener.
Well, hot dog, we have a wiener.
What are you doing with your wiener out there, Dad?
And I don't mind, personally, if the Trojan horse of evolution is pleasure. Bring on a female. Something incredibly new will happen.
How do you know I said that?
Well, I heard on the radio.
Poncho may ride at midnight, but Bozo rides it all day long. This is WBZO.
We're WBZO. And then we make him snort some OxyContin. He will thank us in the morning. Yeah.
Anyway, after taking half an hour waiting for a taxi in Lansdale.
Now, this next and last audio clip that I recorded yesterday, 6925 upper sideband, WTPR, a very well-produced and very funny radio program, lasted only about 12 minutes. Tire Pressure Radio, this was recorded around 1400 to 1412 UTC on the 25th. It was rebroadcasted several times since, many times since. They've added a few other names here and there in the broadcast referring to identities on the FRN. Take a listen to this. This is about 2.5 minutes long, and this will conclude our off-air recordings for this week. WTPR.
The names of the victims are in the hundreds. God, Arthur, all forewarned to stop listening. Kept listening, desperate for entertainment. Find all of his tires flat the next morning. George Sellers kept listening, believing he would garner yet another QSL for his collection. Only to find his Vespa had two flats when he went to the 7-Eleven for his liter of Ripple. How the unbelievers quickly become the believers when they find no air. Deflated self-importance. LC, unable to drive back from his town in the foothills of Virginia after a night of loose living and listening to WTPR. I.O. Snoke, stuck in Texas, a hell on its own making after ignoring the warning to stop listening. But no, he kept on, and now his pressure is not in his tires, so he can't escape the hellish Texas people. They talk about everything is so much more wonderful in Texas, except, of course, for the Cowboys. But let's not talk about that one either. For the air.
gone. Pat Murphy kept listening, and now is stuck behind a keyboard, forever doomed to be the administrator of the FRM, for there is no air in his tires. Cutter and Sunshine, Ragnar, Cracker, William K. Hurt, Sirius George, Uncle John, Poet, D. Stanton, Partner, Radiohead, Maharishi Hashishi, A.J. Michaels, Animal, Ron Hunsicker, Dan Malloy, Neil Wolfe, and Eater. They all know the pain of low tire pressure, yet they still listen, even when warned.
This is the Pirates Week. PiratesWeek.tripod.com.
Well, let's take a look now to some other radio news. I only have one story this week, and it comes from On the Media about the FCC levying fines against some broadcast stations. Really, half of the reason I'm running this is just to hear Bob Garfield from On the Media just kind of go off on a blue streak. This is not kid or work safe. Even though it is coming from NPR's On the Media, take a listen to this. It's just a couple minutes long about obscenity on the airwaves.
From WNYC in New York, this is NPR's On the Media. Brooke Gladstone is out this week. I'm Bob Garfield. Parents, a language alert in this first story. In a three-part order issued last week, the Federal Communications Commission levied the largest fines ever against broadcast stations for airing what the majority deems, quote, indecent content. CBS stations felt the brunt of the blow with $3.6 million in fines for implied sexual situations involving teenagers in its primetime drama Without a Trace. This on top of $550,000 in fines for the Janet Jackson breast exposure incident during the 2004 Super Bowl. Democratic Commissioner Jonathan Adelstein dissented from large portions of the majority decision, but he stands by the government's right to protect against the most egregious trespasses, such as lewdness in front of children during family viewing hours.
Well, look, there are a lot of families gathered around the television during the Super Bowl, not expecting to see adult-type fare. Frankly, it's not that adults don't have every right to see that kind of material, but children are supposed to be protected from that, and parents had no reason to expect that during a Super Bowl they would be subject to that kind of performance, and we had over 500,000 complaints.
But do those complaints, as you analyze them, are they from a lot of individuals acting individually, or were they part of some organized AstroTurf campaign of the American Family Association or elsewhere on the religious right?
I think we see both. I mean, certainly in the case of the Super Bowl, there was a lot of grassroots concern. Without a Trace, my sense is, was much more of an organized campaign that came out of centralized organizations that are monitoring the airwaves. So it depends. But the point is that the FCC needs to look into every complaint, and we do look at every complaint and determine if only one person weighed in or if 100,000 people weighed in. We try to see whether or not the material met the standard or not.
I want to talk to you about the word bullshit. Now, this is commonly used to convey skepticism, but the commission found it to be explicitly execratory and therefore indecent, whereas dickhead as an insult is okay. But where I come from, bullshit is, you know, pretty much kid stuff, and dickhead is pretty darned insulting. All of which is to finally ask, I guess, how do you go about finding standards on this stuff? It just seems to me so arbitrary.
Well, are you actually going to air that, or are you going to edit that out? Because
it depends. Are you on duty?
My colleagues may have an issue with it. To me, it's something that does defy a little bit the imagination. I understand why parents don't want that heard over the airwaves, but our rules require that words that are banned are either sexual or execratory. And I think in common usage, that word is not really one that is execratory. So we made quite a stretch to say that it's inherently so. And I think it's something that is probably going to be challenged in court.
Well, it's time now to go to this week's website of the week. This week it is the North American Shortwave Association homepage. That's right, the NASWA, found at www.naswa.net. And it's really surprising that I have just found this website. Actually, I think I probably did run across it a year or so ago and have forgotten about it. But it is a really nice DXing website. And it does have a lot of pirate-related things. But mostly it's DXing in nature and shortwave listening in nature. What's nice about it is the fact that in the NASWA journal, there is a pirate radio report, and that is prepared by Chris Lobdell. He has a whole bunch of his loggings in there, as well as other pirate-related material. The whole site is a really nice site. It's the North American Shortwave Association homepage, and it is this week's website of the week. Well, I know we covered this last week, but there is a little bit more explanation of the new sunspot prediction method by Jeremy Boot by way of This Week in Amateur Radio. There have been several forecasts stating that the next year's solar activity will be extremely heavy that I have reported here on the Pirates Week. But from World of Radio, Glenn Hauser's program, comes a report that some scientists strongly disagree, saying that this will not happen. Let's take a listen to both reports.
Scientific researchers have found a major breakthrough into forecasting solar activity and its effects on radio communications here on Earth. Some say that this new method could have a definite impact on ham radio, especially on DXing. Here with all the details is Jeremy Boot, G4NJH.
Solar cycle, the next sunspot cycle, will be 30 to 50% stronger than its predecessor and will begin as much as a year later than previously forecast, according to scientists from the US-based National Center for Atmospheric Research. If the prediction is correct, the next solar maximum could be the most intense since historic solar minimum of 1958. The National Center for Atmospheric Research scientists believe they have mastered the art of accurately forecasting solar cycles. They've developed a computer model that they claim has simulated the strength of the past eight solar cycles with an accuracy of more than 98%. This amazing precision is achieved by using the subsurface movements of sunspot remnants of the previous two solar cycles to calculate the strength of the next cycle. Mausumi Dikpati, the leader of the research team, said, "Our model has demonstrated the necessary skills to be used as a forecasting tool." Closed quotes. The sun undergoes an 11-year cycle of activity from peak storm activity to quiet and back again, but until now there was no precise method of predicting their timing and strength. Being able to accurately predict, or rather to predict accurately, the sun's cycles years ahead could help society prepare for periods of intense solar storms, which can disrupt communications, slow down satellite orbits, and crash power systems. Solar storms are thought to be caused by twisted magnetic fields in the sun that suddenly snap, releasing huge amounts of energy. They usually occur near dark regions of concentrated magnetic fields known as sunspots.
The scientific team has said that the newly developed model has shown all of the necessary accuracy that is needed to be used as a solar event forecasting tool.
Not everyone agrees with the widely publicized recent prediction that the next solar cycle will be one of the highest ever. Tom Jella, retired meteorologist and space plasma physicist, says the prediction is utter nonsense. It appears that cycle 24 will be the smallest, not the largest, in many cycles. We are currently in a multi-decadal oscillation that features even smaller sunspot cycles.
Okay, with all the talk about solar activity, let's do the propagation forecast and wrap this puppy up.
There were no zero sunspot days over the past week. In fact, the average daily sunspot number was a little more than double the previous week's numbers, rising over 17 points to 33.4. This was a nice little pickup tick toward the solar cycle minimum coming with the start of spring for the Northern Hemisphere. Unfortunately for HF operators, the average geomagnetic numbers doubled as well. This and the associated aurora were triggered by a solar wind stream that hit Earth beginning on Saturday, March 18th. Maximal effects were felt the following day when the College A index, measured less than 2 degrees latitude south of the Arctic Circle, rose to 51 on Sunday. Saturday's College A index was 39, but on Friday, March 17th, it was only 2, a very quiet number. The planetary A index over those same days was 3, 26, and 37. And the mid-latitude A index was 2, 15, and 24. Looking ahead for the next few days, there shouldn't be any nasty surprises regarding propagation. The predicted planetary A index for the next 5 days, March 24th through the 28th, is 12, 12, 10, 7, and 5.
Well, that's going to wrap up the Pirates Week podcast for this last week of March. A couple of announcements I want to get out of the way really quick. First is the fact that I'm not sure if there's going to be a Pirates Week next week or not. If it is one, it's going to be a couple days late and probably very abbreviated. I'm not going to be around next weekend. Second up, a couple minutes ago as I was flipping around my computer trying to get the Pirates Week out, I accidentally deleted an email before I even read it, and I didn't even see who it was from. I just saw a bunch of letters that looked like it was a email address that was a ham name. If you sent me something today, Sunday, the 26th, and you're a ham, and that's, you know, if that's your email address with a bunch of letters, resend it, please. I'm sorry, I didn't even look at it. It just went away. What else? Oh, hey, I have been listening to WTPR, this new radio, pirate radio station that hit the airwaves this last couple of days. That is some very, very funny stuff. Head over to the FRN in the logging section. I have recorded several of their broadcasts. It's more or less the same broadcast over and over again. It'll also be posted in the audio download section of the Pirates Week. Funny, funny stuff. If you have been following the tire pressure fiasco for the last year or so, WTPR, W Tire Pressure Radio, take a listen to it. Good, good stuff. I have been recording it from typically 6925 upper sideband, and that is really the funny radio station of the week. Well, we kept it short this week, like I typically try to. Don't forget to head over to the blog to take a look at the show notes for all the links of the stories we have covered today. And once again, thank you for listening.
From the Boat Anchor Soft Glow to your MP3 player via the World Wide Web, we meld the oldest and the newest audio technology. Welcome to the Pirates Week, piratesweek.tripod.com.
You are without doubt the worst pirate I've ever heard of.
But you have heard of me.